to a special edition of Local Matters. This is Margaret Williams, news editor at Mountain Express, and I'm joined today by photographer and man around the universe, Jerry Nelson, as well as longtime energy alternative energy advocate, Ned Doyle, who each year runs and coordinates and pulls off the Southern Energy Expo. So welcome, guys.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Glad to be here.
We're here to talk about a little bus trip that these two took with a bunch of other Asheville-ians on their way to visit where we all heading, what we were doing, and what was it all about.
Let me dip in here. Augusta, Georgia was the destination for 34 local citizens for one of a series of public hearings held by the Blue Ribbon Commission on Nuclear Future for America. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing really revolves around a range of issues for the nuclear industry in America today. There are a number of apparently intractable problems with the storage issues, with weapons production, with fuel production, with the costs and long-term and short-term storage for fuel waste. And the commission is looking at policy recommendations for President Obama with a draft due to be delivered in July of this summer, 2011. So the upshot of it is that a bus of citizens from Western North Carolina went to this public hearing adjacent to the Savannah River site because there's a mm-hmm. proposal known as the Savannah River Site Energy Park, which would effectively be a new project for expanding the nuclear industry as it is now in terms of reprocessing and also the potential development of a new generation of smaller module reactors, and there's a couple of different designs, but basically they were fishing for federal funds to expand this program and in a number of ways bail out the utilities that are currently utilizing nuclear power for generation.
And who organized the bus trip?
Well, the bus trip was something of a grassroots coagulation. Initially, I think the seed behind it was Mary Olson and Lou Patry and some of the folks with the Western North Carolina Physicians for Social Responsibility and the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. But it pretty much took on a life of its own, and we've just about filled the bus going down there.
Yeah, you called asking me to go, and well, I'm kind of stuck here in the office. And Jerry, how did you get mixed up into this little bus trip and going down to check this out?
I'm not sure how I got mixed up in it. Oh, David Ireland with the Green Party. I was talking with him about it, and he mentioned I thought it'd be a good photo opportunity and a chance to go along. So David hooked me up with Mary, got on the bus, and went on out of here.
And you mentioned to me that you about that?
Yeah, after I talked with David and thought it'd be something that ran by you and mm-hmm. had pretty much decided whether, regardless of what you said, that I was going to go on down. Because it sounded interesting from the way David described it. You know, I grew up in the 60s, and everybody was pro-nuke, and there was a small contingent of anti-nuke. I never paid any attention to the issue, really. And so I thought it would be a neat opportunity to get some great photos because mm-hmm. I thought there was going to be a bunch of people chained to a cooling tower and daring the cops. I didn't know what type of venue it was going to be. But it was educational. It was educational.
So y'all started real early in the morning, so you showed up crack of dawn or before dawn with your camera.
Yeah, before crack of dawn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think crack of dawn showed up an hour after we got there.
We saw the sunrise in South Carolina as we were rolling along the highway in the bus, which was a remarkably impressive sight, seeing the sun come up and the colors and the reflections off the clouds. Looked like a good omen, and we'll see whether that comes to fruition, but it was an interesting ride, as Jerry noted. We were on the road far too early in the morning for civilized people, at least in my opinion, and the meeting, it really was a remarkable gathering from a lot of standpoints because it was probably one of the biggest public meetings where virtually everyone was really well informed. You know, it wasn't a mm-hmm. polarized protest screaming match type of a thing one might typically think of in these cases, but a lot of views across the board, pro and con, were represented, and a very interesting hearing because almost every opinion was floated about before the commissioners, and some were polar opposites in conclusions.
Mm-hmm. So what were the results?
Well,
did the commission decide anything?
The results remain to be seen. It was a part of a series of hearings that they've held around the country. Apparently the largest attendance of any particular one so far, and they're essentially on a fact-finding mission to deliver a draft recommendation in July, so no conclusions were reached, but a lot of issues were raised and touched on, which affect not only the Southeast region in the country, but Western North Carolina in particular, and that's what got us down there. The nuclear issues are complicated, which is a simple way to put it. And there's a lot to it, which maybe, as Jerry noted, why a lot of people don't pay attention to it. You start looking into it and your head swims with all the ramifications. Mm-hmm. However, in this case, the two specific proposals that are being floated, discussed, and certainly not decided, that directly impact the Western North Carolina region and Asheville, notably, are one, a proposal to reprocess, essentially extract the plutonium from existing nuclear waste on site at about 104 different power plants. Well, 74 locations and 104 reactors. And secondly, the ongoing search for a long-term repository for the eventual waste generated not only from this process, but other high-level waste around the country. And the upshot of it is that if, and there's quite a few qualifiers here, if a reprocessing program did move forward, there would be literally thousands, and some estimates reach tens of thousands, of shipments of extremely high-level radioactive nuclear waste shipped from those 74 sites to the Savannah River site for this extremely dubious reprocessing proposal. And due to the highway structure where the nuclear plants are located, they'll be coming through the I-26 and I-40 corridor, is the short answer.
Yes,
a bulk of them, not all, but a majority of them will be routed right through here. And I found it absolutely fascinating that federal guidelines clearly suggest avoiding populated areas such as Charlotte and Atlanta, but they don't seem to have any problem with running it down through Asheville.
I recall former Asheville Mayor Wendy Sicknick bringing this up years ago, because there have periodically been fears that something like this would happen, that the shipments would start coming through here.
Shipments are, in fact, already coming through here, but we'd be looking at an increase in magnitudes of order in terms of not only the total number of shipments, but the hazard of the material being shipped through. So even discussing transportation problems, hazards, and shipments, there's a lot involved with that right now. Now, there are shipments, there are movements through the area and across the country, and there haven't been too many accidents with them. But if we look at upping the ante to thousands of more shipments with many, many times more dangerous cargo, it's statistical probability. Somebody's going to see a significant accident.
That is a possibility. So, Jerry, from your perspective, what did you get out of all this?
Oh, I got to
say, we got some great pictures. We got some pictures that we hope to share with folks.
I got to thank him for laying a framework. I had a chance to sit down with you for about an hour before was exposed to this commission and everything. So he created a real neat framework for me. If he hadn't have done that, I wouldn't have been able to put into the different places everything that was being said with any type of comprehension. And while I was shooting, I got the impression that the commission has already decided whatever their report's going to be in July. I did not get the impression they were there to hear information. I got the impression that their decision had already been made, and they were just filtering for people's viewpoints that supported the decision they had already made.
And Dan, you're nodding your head there a little bit. Was that the impression you had, that they've already decided, or?
I think that would probably be the impression that any reasonable person would get who actually sat through a couple of hours of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not reasonable.
Well, unreasonable too. I'm trying to leave a little bit of slack, but they really did seem to. You could tell just from the body language in many ways, and the lack of questions when certain issues were raised, and the enthusiasm for pumping federal dollars into the Savannah River site. Money we don't have and we can't afford.
The thing that really hit me in the face was these people, meaning the commission, aren't interested. I'm standing at the end of the commission table, 3-4 feet from Brent
Scrocoff.
Yes. And I'm shooting over the commission table at the speakers at another table. And I glance down and he's checking his email. And to me, that really told me that these people aren't interested in what's being said. They're just paid performers being here because they're performing. And so I lowered the lens and got a great shot over his shoulder, showing his email on the screen with the people that were speaking blurred out in the background. And in my mind, that's, for me, that was the whole thing. The commissioners that were there and the speakers were just background noise.
Traditionally, the commissions and study groups and so forth that have been related with these issues are really not particularly interested in the public's input. They're quite interested in the business community's input and corporate input and the military's input on it. But as far as public comment, at best it's a polite nod that, as Jerry indicated, gives them a chance to check emails and, you know, kind of mind drift away. However, there are a lot of larger issues that are coming to the fore that, in my opinion, have a very good chance of bringing this more front and center to the public, because the primary one, in terms of the general picture, is the fiscal problem we've got right now. The proposals that they are looking at for the Blue Ribbon Commission on America's Nuclear Future essentially require either one, literally tens of billions of dollars more of federal tax dollars and or additional rate increases for utility customers. And there's no private investment for any of this nuclear technology. I mean, that's a bold statement, but there's essentially zero. It would be remarkable if you can find one. And so it has to be tax-supported or utility rate customer-supported, such as Construction Works in Progress in North Carolina that was reintroduced after being outlawed, I should note, in the 80s. And with the Tea Party ascension and the fiscal problems that on the state and local and national level, all of them, everybody's hurting, to dump more money down a literal rat hole of problems just doesn't make sense. And it's very dubious whether we have that many billions to toss around anyway. But if they were going to be tossed around, there are far more productive and investments to get into that are really going to return a lot more in terms of jobs and sustainability and energy policy and so forth. So I think that just the price tag alone for many people, if they actually sit down and look at it, is going to be kind of a slap in the face to a lot of people that may or may not even care about the nuclear issues in terms of morality or safety or health or any of those other issues, just strictly on the economics of it.
Uh-huh. Now, on the other hand, or to take a little different tack, you know, there are some proponents of nuclear energy who say France has been doing it safely for a long time, and they have a whole lot less air pollution and other problems that we have because so many of our plants are coal-fueled and natural gas-fueled. And to make it all the more interesting, Duke and Progress Energy have announced a merger, which would make Duke Energy the largest energy company in the U.S. with the most customers. Let's say the most customers, 7.1 million customers.
Well, Margaret, there are people that contend the Earth is flat, and it's a free country, and they're certainly entitled to express their opinion. But the facts are that France is, for all practical purposes, another failed experiment with nuclear power. It's a completely socialist energy system, and supported by their taxpayers and so on. I mean, that's the economics of it are totally not sustainable. They have a significant number of problems with waste, much of which has been dumped into the English Channel and the North Sea, which is there's a serious problem with that, as well as on ground repositories that are having issues. They have effectively maxed out on the capacity for building new plants that they're dealing with, and have run into any range of problems, including probably one of the most obvious at times is that they run out of water to cool the reactors, so they have to shut them back down. So mm-hmm. the using France as an example of a successful nuclear program.
That's why you're smiling at me. Yeah, it's
absurd. That's the best you can do. It's completely failed. So they're going down the rat hole. So people that say it's a great system obviously then support socialized energy in the United States and taxpayer investments and avoiding private industry. And yes, as you mentioned, the Duke and Progress Energy merger just announced this past Monday is an interesting development from any number of standpoints. The overwhelming odds are the shareholders and corporate entities are going to clean up on this one. That's my guess. I looked through the 35-page presentation that they had for the merger last night. And from their standpoint, I think it's been extremely profitable. From the standpoint of the customer...
Not so sure. I've seen some reports that say customers here aren't going to see... Well, Duke has periodically asked for some rate increases. Progress has been a little slower on that, but...
The customer gets the short end. It's the short synopsis of it. The best that they indicated in the presentation that I looked through anyway was that effectively they won't hit the customer quite as hard as they might have otherwise. So it's like saying, you know, well, we can shoot you twice or we can shoot you four times and be grateful we only shot you twice. The customers are going to get the short end of it. It's history. It just never happened before that the customers actually benefited. And drawing it back into our other conversation, that notwithstanding, their merger seems to put them in a stronger position to lobby for federal money and rate increases for developing an alleged fleet of more nuclear power plants. At the same time, there is also a lot of interest with Duke Power, and to a lesser extent with Progress, it seems, to transition some of their power systems over to natural gas. So who knows where it's going to go? I mean, it's too early to say. Transitioning to natural gas would be a baby step in the right direction,
and that would be better.
It's fiscal lunacy to move down the path of making more nuclear reactors, though.
Of course, now you yourself, you live off the grid and have been doing so for quite a long time.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm a 100% avid supporter of nuclear energy as long as it's 93 million miles away. And so my energy is provided by a nuclear process, fusion as opposed to fission. And the fact is the technology, the economics.
You mean solar energy, that's what he's talking about.
Okay. Yes, the sun, yeah.
Translate, the sun.
That blazing ball of fire in the sky.
Remote nuclear energy.
Exactly, and that's fine. But having it in your backyard, which we probably should come back to, is not appropriate. And again, just from the economic standpoint, not from all the other overarching issues, any kind of money spent on nuclear is money down a rat hole, especially compared to the investment we can make in green building, improving our infrastructure, improving energy efficiency, deploying more wind and solar, for example. There's a whole range of options here that are proven technologies. They work fine. They're less expensive. They have a much better return on investment. They avoid the same problems with foreign oil sources and so on. I mean, the whole list is there. It's just that a handful of people are making money faster than you and I could count it following through on these failed programs with nuclear. So, again, there's a lot to it, but with the short time we might have left here, one of the ramifications from the public hearing that was clear was this ongoing search for a long-term repository site and a candidate. It is not chosen. It's not a fact. It arguably is just conjecture. However, Sandy Mush site, just miles outside of Asheville, was studied in the 80s and discovered to be and deemed as a potentially suitable repository for long-term waste storage because of the granite formations. Well, a political decision was made in the 1980s to take the granite and the eastern sites off the table and go to Yucca Mountain in Nevada. Well, the Sandy Marsh site was never removed from consideration. It was just, you know, put in the parking lot, as it were. Uh-huh. And 20 years later, $9 billion, the Yucca Mountain site is completely unsuitable. So we're back to the square one search. And it's public knowledge in terms of the Blue Ribbon Commission and statements that are out there that one of the considerations for a long-term site would be as close as reasonable to any new reprocessing effort, which I mentioned earlier. So uh-huh. if that goes on at SRS, and from a technical standpoint, from an engineering experience standpoint, Savannah River site really would be the place to try to work on these issues because they've got a built-in infrastructure dealing with these high-level radiation issues and bombs and so forth. So setting aside every good reason not to do it, it is a place to do it. And so considering the lobbying that's going on right now to revive all this, then finding a site nearby, bingo, brings you right back to Sandy Marsh again. And who knows? Sanity and reason may prevail, and no one's going to go down this route. But if it does, it's not crying wolf. It's saying, hey, look, you know, we've got a history of dealing with this, and they're back at it again. And the impacts in our area could be very significant. We look at the economic base we have with tourism, with the wild, the natural environment, with agriculture and so on. Thousands of these shipments and plus the repository there, it's just not compatible with what we've got going here. And the last thing I know was very telling, and I was struck by it, but right in the face at the Blue Ribbon Commission hearings, the representatives pitching the reprocessing effort and building new modular reactors blatantly, clearly said, we don't want the storage here. We don't want to deal with it. We can't handle it here. They don't want to keep it either. So, you know, you can't blame them because they know how expensive and dangerous it is. But if these are the guys that are promoting the proposals to build an energy park and even they won't even talk about long-term storage on the site, how good can this be for the rest of the citizens in the Southeast region?
Good point, Ned. And I know if you'll keep us up to date on further developments, and we'll put Jerry on the bus again should y'all go down there again. Thank you guys for joining me on a icy cold Wednesday. This is Local Matters Special Edition.